Chapter 3. Last time we covered the first 8 verses. And as we noticed, the time was mentioned over 30 times. So I guess that's the emphasis in it, time. And this time was a time where God controls, that God's sovereignty, meaning His power, but also through His actions as He exerts that power. We know our God that is, we know that His power is exerted for our good and for our edification. But also that power is exerted to teach us wisdom, to teach us perspective in life. We know in life there are many difficulties, many roadblocks, many temptations. And in these temptations, God has provided a way, a true and perfect way, that we can overcome these and again have the right perspective in life. Solomon, in the writing of the book of Ecclesiastes, keeps us on the track of life on this earth. And what's the value of life in this earth? I know in the book of Ecclesiastes, he goes through a lot of turns and twists, a lot of experiences that people go through in the perspective that he had because he had seen everything. And as an older man, he in fact has. Whether it's the wealth and the power, whether it's the things of prestige, whether it's the things of knowing other people's values, that he tries to explain that to us here, again, by the inspiration of God. So we can glean from Ecclesiastes, maybe sadden in some points, how man treats man, how governments treat other men. But we can also glean from this that in the end, chapter 12 and even beginning in chapter 3, he looks out to God, that God will judge in the end. So those are things in life that we need to consider. In these first 15 verses of chapter 3, which we've only been through chapter verse number 8, it's talking about the sovereignty of God. And when we talk about the sovereignty of God, we are talking about that power that He exerts through His wisdom. Whether it's in nature, whether it's in the control of nations, one nation rises and another one falls, whether it's Him dealing with those things in our lives that seem to be very personal. God knows those things, and He has the perspective that in the end, if we just follow and do what's right, do the good things, treat one another good, and again, fear God, all will work out in the end for us. In life, we're thrown a lot of different curves. And in this first few verses of chapter 3, he talks about those things that really are out of our control somewhat. God may deal with the circumstances of them, but we react to them. And how we react to personal relationships or to our government or to life and death, those are choices that we make. And those things help us in this life, again, to appreciate the life hereafter, which awaits all of us, which awaits all of us. But again, we can't overlook the idea that Solomon writes this Ecclesiastes book from the perspective, I'll use that word again, as life under the sun, life under heaven, this physical life that we're in. In this physical life, we have to learn that there's limitations in it, that the sovereignty of God is in control, but again, we still have personal choice. So let's remember that as we go through this book of Ecclesiastes. Now, as we looked at those first few verses, it shows man's limitations. You think you can control things. You think you can. But it's limited. That we think that we're all powerful, whether it be a king who has life and death in his hands, who control great armies. What he says goes without question. Even Solomon sees that he has limitations. And he's trying to impart that to the readers. Again, in chapter 3. Now, we got through the first 7-8 verses, which was a great contrast in feelings, in love and love and peace, war and peace, love and hate, those sort of things. So he does a lot of contrast there. And again, everything bounded by time, by time. Sometimes you see the word seasons. So that's what we need to think about as we go through these verses. Now, in verse number 9, after he dealt with all these works, I guess you'd say, in verse 1 through 8, please review them to get a chance. He says, "What profit is there to the worker from that in which he toils?" And again, life under the sun. No, there is no profit in it. It's all bankrupt. Because, again, you live and you die, and that's all there is. But interesting, his transition he makes somewhat. He puts God in the mix, beginning in chapter 3, little chapter 2. But beginning in chapter 3, he puts God in the mix. And that causes man to look a little differently, a little different at his life, hopefully. And in, let's see. And again, when there's control involved, there's still God's efforts to make his will come true. Even though whatever man messes up on this earth, okay, whatever path he goes, whether kings, countries, whatever it is, God's will is going to be done in the end. That should give us great confidence. Great confidence. Okay? That it exerts his power and that we are not the old all-powerful in this earth. Now, in verse 10, he says, "I have seen the task which God has given the sons of men with which to occupy themselves." We've talked about Solomon. He's experienced all these things up to in his life. And he's seen how men react to men, how governments react to governments. He's seen how he reacts to people and governments. And again, by the advantage that he has of God granting him the wisdom from above. And he's always trying to help guide wisdom. Why don't people use this wisdom? He's a great man of wisdom. Now, in this sovereignty, a word comes up meaning providence. Again, God's will is going to be done. But God's providence. When you pray for someone, what are you requesting? God's help, aren't you? I know in our congregation here, we have those who need prayers, that need God's providence. And again, God's will is going to be done. And of course, God has the power, but the wisdom he has is where he exerts, you know, into our lives and into country's lives, whatever it is. His will is going to be done in the end. I think it's a, now, do we know when providence occurs? I don't. But we know in God's plan, everything's going to come out the way he wants it to come out. That's a great trust, capital T-R-U-S-T, that we need to have and his wisdom and his might. Now, but interesting in verse 11, he gets into a point here that we need to think about. And Solomon recognized it back then also. That in verse 11 it says, he has made everything appropriate in its time. Again, that builds confidence. It builds us that there's a healthy way to look at life. And with God, and eventually and predominantly and rightly control things for his will be done. Not to override our will, but his will be done in the great scheme of plans. And that sometimes you hear songs, everything is beautiful. Yes, it could be. And it is when God's plan is filled out. And we're not roadblocks in that plan. Now, the last part of 11 is interesting. Where he says, he has also set eternity in their hearts. There's something in man where he has put in our minds the idea that there's an infinity out there. And we of all people, God has created us to think about that. To know that there is an eternity in our hearts. That we can think beyond this life. I know it's hard to grasp that sometimes. But that's why there is HOPE. As we see in the New Testament. Let that be the anchor of our soul. So in us, each of us, all of the creation who is made in the image of God has that eternity in their mind. That you can think beyond the hunting and gathering day by day. That you can think of a future. That, matter of fact, you can think of an afterlife. So that's a perspective that God has put in us. And the last part of 11, he has also said, yet, so that man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. Even though we've got this eternity set in our mind, perspective, it's still fuzzy somewhat. It's without a lot of detail somewhat. But again, we need to know that God knows everything from the beginning. The great mind and power at work in the beginning, the sovereignty of God, to the end of time, end of our time, into eternity. So those are things that should give us awe. Those are things that we should be thinking about when we make decisions and choices. That God is in control, that we contribute what we can, and God knows, again, every thought, every action that we have. Now, anybody add to that? Yes, sir.
Everything, as you pointed out, has to focus around the point of the book, which is in verse 9. So he talks about all these times. He doesn't tell us exactly or specifically what he has in mind. But the point is, when you get through with the time to die, the time to be born, the time to kill, the time to heal, etc., what profit is it? The answer is none. So it's just absolute futility. So when you get down to verse 10 and 11, what do we desire? Break beyond the bounds of these times to know more about the life, what's going to happen on this earth. When I'm dead, I'm gone. I don't have anything to do with it. I'll talk about that in chapter 9. If you're going to do something, you better do it now. But there's something in us that wants to go beyond those time limits. But he says God doesn't let us. What about eternity as far as heaven? He doesn't talk about it. It's come at the nature of man to break beyond these bounds. So, since I'm limited by time, I can't know what's going to be in the future or have anything to do with it. What am I going to do about it? I can go crazy. I can give up and be a bum. Or we can do what it says in verse 12 following.
God doesn't want us to give up. It was a strive in this life to see what's out there beyond us. But again, we've got to live in the here and now. Did he think about eternity? Probably. But what do we do now to improve our lives? To do the things that are good, that God will judge us in the end about. So when we look at these verses in the perspective of life on earth, the physical life, we've got that yearning. Solomon had that yearning to look beyond. But again, this is the vanity of life. That even though our best efforts here will be gone when we die. What a contrast. That these 70 or 80 short years here determine the eternity for us. Again, everything here is dealing with the vanity of this life. And that should spur us to think about our actions, how we treat others, and how we view the scriptures that we have in front of us, which are eternal. They'll judge us in the last day. Now, just a quick point here. I know Rocky taught us in the preceding months about John, the Gospel of John. And it's an excellent book to deal with eternal life. And again, helping us with this perspective of life after death. And it wouldn't hurt us to reread that, to look at John's Gospel. It truly is good news to know there's life after death. And as we go through these verses, we need to think about that. And somewhat, we can fully grasp it if we can. I don't know if we ever will, until we actually in the presence of Christ. But to think about eternity, and to think about the vanity of this life. This is not all there is in this life. In verse 12, it's interesting, after he deals with these issues, he says, I know. So Solomon's making an observation here. I know the conclusion or solution to this. And that there's life cycles, things that occur. And in these life cycles, in trying to understand it, like Steve was mentioning, it is, the words here, a grievous task. That he's striving to know, even all the wisdom he has, still says a difficult task to understand these concepts of eternity, the concepts of things beyond the vanity of this life, what's the purpose of being here. And the solution. And he says in verse 12, I know that there is nothing better. Interesting the word better. Look for that in scripture here. I've emphasized that. For these sons of man than to rejoice and to do good in one's lifetime. Birth to death. As we saw in 3 verse 2. Nothing better to rejoice. What is it sometimes to have difficulties you view as difficulties? And how do you work through those? How do you work through those things in this life that God has granted in your sphere of influence or in your life? What is it, making turning lemon into lemonade? And those sort of things is the view of to rejoice and to do good in one's lifetime, from birth to death, which are, I guess you say, the bookends of our life, isn't it? Birth and death, and a life in between. Truly, these are messages throughout time. And if I may say at this point, for those in youth, it's good to grasp the points that your life is ahead of you, and that in this life you can do futile things. You can do useless things. But keep in perspective that this is your life. And again, 70 or so or 80 short years. So remember these principles that we're going to see in Ecclesiastes, that not to view the accumulation of wealth, the accumulation of prestige, the accumulation of power, are not the end and aim of your life. To serve God, if you have these abilities, good. But do good to all. Do good to all and rejoice in everything you have. There was a song, I forget the words of it, but it was in the West Virginia hills, and the poorest of people, hardworking. But they said, we've got each other. We've got a roof over our heads. We have joy in our hearts because we are a family together. So isn't that a good way to look at life? Okay, rejoice in what comes your way. Comes your way. Now, let's see if I made my points there. And the interesting thing about doing good, what is doing good? Is it being moral? Yes. Is it being ethical? Yes. Is it being a service to others? Yes. Those sort of things we can all choose to do. And thank God that we now understand that when we do err in our doing good, what we do with other people, that we can repent and change. And we're given guidance by that in scriptures. So these are things to keep in mind in this doing good part. Now, in 13, moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all his labor. It is the gift of God. You know, it's a gift of God, not only by providence, to have, but to enjoy and to use properly what God provides. Small amount, large amount. Friends or no friends. Large church or small church. God's provided those things. And that's, again, we have joy in that. And in verse 14.
Doug,
yes, sir.
Go on. Can I make a request?
Yeah, go ahead.
Would you comment on the difference in verse 12 and 13 here and Luke 12, 19, and 20? They seem to be directly opposed.
19 and 20, Luke 19 and 20, deals with... deals with a man who viewed life as the accumulation of wealth, build bigger barns. And that was his purpose in life. And Jesus reminded him at that moment, okay, that you can do all this. You can do all this, but I'm going to require your life will be over soon, and what will you have? Through your covetousness in viewing life, is that all there was? And again, God, Jesus brings him back to the point that this is not all there is. Of course, in the perspective of Solomon and life under earth, this is all there is. And God said, enjoy this now. Enjoy, for it is a gift of God. So one has a covetous attitude and neglecting the eternity, and one doesn't. Okay, on life under the sun. Okay?
Do you think there might be the greed involved versus the contentment, the enjoyment, the thankfulness, you know, that one could have if they even, they can be rich, but they can be thankful, they can, you know, it's not about everything that who they are.
Right.
You know, and this man in Luke seems to be, you know, he was just all he thought about, all he, you know, did. He was greed.
Greed and content, Linda talks about. Greed and content. If greed is the motivation, you'll step on people, won't you? You'll hurt. And again, under life under the sun, it's gone when you die. Whether your children, whoever gets it, whatever they do with it, it's beyond your control. But in the admonitions that Solomon's giving here from the mind of God, that you need to be content, that you need to live in a life where you don't have this greed because God has granted you, you know, what you have here. Whether it's the seasons, whether it's a time without war, whatever it is, be content with that. I think sometimes that if I was in a concentration camp in the 40s, what would be my attitude in living each day? Please get this over with. Okay? Take me quickly? Or would it be to, you know, at least I have a meal. I'm living. And this war is going to be over. See, you can look a little farther down. What's the attitude? And whatever circumstances you're in. You know, some of us have, I don't know what to call it, disabilities, but we have problems in our bodies that hinder us. They hinder us in with pain. It'll hinder us with our activities we'd like to do. But look beyond that, that you're living, that you're here. You still have influence over others for the time that we have here and the season that we're in. So again, we can look to be good. We can look to the best in things. And again, be all that is the hope that we have for eternity. Isn't that not a motivating factor? So appreciate the comments.
Sir.
Yes, sir.
Well, on the subject, you said a couple other points about it. Yeah, you know, we're constrained by time.
Yes.
Pointing out, you know, we may like to think beyond time, but we really can't conceive of. We can't even conceive it. I can't conceive it.
It's hard.
The word I understand, but what does that really mean? Because I'm a temporal person. I'm constrained by time. Interesting, like to me about the guy in Luke. I mean, we talk about it in materialism, but there are a couple of things strike me, particularly in context in the view of Ecclesiastes. He apparently thought he had all the time in the world. I mean, time was not a constraint to him. Point one. Point two, the man was consumed by pride. I will do this, I will do that, I will do that. He viewed his worth in terms of his accomplishments, his skill, his efforts. So he was very, very constrained in his thinking. And you know, one thing is clear in God's word, pride is not something that is held up. That kind of pride is not something that's held up in God's eyes. It's favorable, quite the contrary.
Pride is another interesting word, isn't it? It motivates. It motivates us to do good or not. To be prideful, full of pride, like the man we're talking about. He wasn't constrained by time. He didn't understand that. And again, this day your soul will be required of you. All the words at that time. Again, they knew at that time, okay, that there is an eternity. So we need to be careful of that in our lives, that we only have 24 hours in a day and short time here. All right. Thank you. In verse 14, I know that everything God does will remain forever. There's nothing to add to it, and there's nothing to take from it. For God has so worked that men should fear God. And we'll see the interesting, the fear God. Fear God. Now, what is fear? I guess you'd be fear of the fiery hell, I guess. Okay? Well, what else can you, what is that other word, fear also?
Respect.
Respect. Okay? As you can understand that even though we can't control what's really what's going on out there through providence, but in God's mind, we can respect His being, His creation, His care and keeping of us, and again, the great sacrifice for all of us. Again, looking forward in time. And when we have that respect for the Creator, what does it do on us day by day? As a youth, it should make us think about our actions. Action to who we associate with. What things we get boxed in with. What kind of parties we go to. I know youth is wild sometimes, wanting to investigate. And I can remember, okay, I survived. But I may not have survived. You don't know. But certainly Ecclesiastes is a good book for the youth. Now, interesting point he makes in verse 14. And there is nothing to take from it, for God is so worked that man should fear God. You know, in these cycles of life, these generations we go through, is there anything we could take from that? In Solomon's view, there is nothing you can take from that. His generation somewhat erases the past generation's achievements, or their good things they did, or it builds on it. There's always a change. It's forgotten. So it's an interesting point, okay? Cycles of life. Now, in verse 15, that which has been already and that which will be has already been, God seeks what has passed by. Well, that's an interesting verse, okay? But it says, here it is not to prove the vanity or the endless sameness. And it also proves that there's orderly succession of events like we saw in 1 through 8. That God never loses track. And that's comforting. God never loses track and never forgets what is passed by. Unlike us, in generation to generation, or even in our lives, we forget. God never forgets, and that's comforting to know that. Now, and if He never forgets, what does God do with that if He never forgets? He uses it for judgment, doesn't He? Because God never forgets. So that's the perspective we need to think about. In verse 16, furthermore, King Solomon says, I've seen under the sun that in the place of justice there is wickedness, and the place of righteousness, there is wickedness. Verse 17, I said to myself, God will judge both the righteous man and the wicked man, for time for every matter, for every deed is there. What is justice? What is wickedness? You can see where those of power, which he's observing, those of power can cause misery through wickedness. And he's observing that under the sun. Haven't we observed that today in various countries and places and localities and cities? And he knows that God is in control of that, and he's making the opposite, the viewpoint here that there is wickedness. Can you deny that there's wickedness in the world? You can't deny it. Can you deny that there's justice in the world? Yes. But again, he's looking at wickedness sometimes, and many times overcomes justice. Justice. And again, an observation in life under the sun. Well, how do you view that? How do you view when you're the object of wickedness? How do you view it? Well, you do what you can to deal with it. And you deal with it. You don't change your viewpoints, okay? Meaning one's agreed to get past wickedness or lying, stealing, whatever it is. You just know that's part of the world. Part of the world. And live through it with the right perspective. Now, yes, ma'am.
Until I went into the house of the Lord. You see their end. So we see wickedness in this world, but we can't let that distort our life. We have to, do the positive things that we can do, because some things we just can't change.
Yeah. And interesting, Linda used the word distort our life. We can't let wickedness in the world distort the path that we want to be on. And hopefully we're on. It may detour us a little, okay? But we need to work to stay on that path that is narrow. It's narrow. Good point. Now, on page 17... Question 3. Something to take from our lesson. Okay? What does God do about this injustice in 3:17? What does he do about it? I said to myself, what does he do? Don't you worry about it. I'll judge it. I understand. I know everything. I control the seasons. I control time. I will judge it. Don't worry about things that you have no control or influence over. We can get wrapped up in the news sometimes. And it takes our time for one thing. It's okay to be informed. But move on. Why should you worry about things or use your time and efforts? Do something you have no influence or control over. Now, there may be a lesson taught in the news that we need to glean from it. Or maybe some wisdom, quote unquote. But don't let it occupy our time. Whether it's a useless emotions, on YouTube or whatever it is, that uses our time. And time is so precious, especially as you get older. So just a thing to think about. Now, that's that question. And again, we saw in 17, God will judge both the righteous man and the wicked man. On his own timetable, he's going to do that. The time of his choosing. And God's going to choose it in his time, not ours, on judgment. For a time for every matter and for every deed is there. God will settle a score. He'll judge without error when he judges. And that's comforting to know that. Now, any questions? I think we've taken the time here to deal with God's judgment. And again, Solomon's now getting into God's in the mix. God's in the mix. And we can have confidence in his judgment and his power. But we should also recognize our power and influence is limited too. In those things relating to time and seasons. Now, verse 18 and 19. I said to myself concerning the sons of man, God has surely tested them in order for them to see that they are but beasts. For the fate of the sons of man and the fate of beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. Indeed, they all have the same breath, and there is no advantage for man over beast, for all is vanity. If you view life as just living here on earth, if you view life with no eternity, don't we just act like beasts? Don't we just the same as animals? Is there no spark inside of us or yearning for eternity? And he said, that's what it boils down to. If you act like beasts, you're acting like there is no goodness that you can do, that there is no judgment. And those things are a thing that he deals with. And let's see. In just a second. Okay? And remember, the end of all this was just like the beast. It lives and it dies. So the perspectives, again, to think about that in life. Okay? We'll try to move a little faster next time. But appreciate your efforts this morning. And please continue to read these 12 short chapters. Okay? Thank you.